All right, good afternoon, everyone. It's good to be back in Wellington with you all for our first post-Cabinet press conference of the year. Let me first give you a bit of an overview of the coming week. Today we held the first Cabinet of the year. I can say that we have a very busy time ahead, and I'll say a little bit more about that tomorrow. Wednesday, tomorrow, the Labour Party caucus will be held at Breaker Bridge in the Wairarapa. We'll be discussing our goals and our plans for the year and considering priorities. As you should all know by now, media will be invited for my opening comments and then a stand-up which will take place around lunchtime. On Thursday, our away caucus will finish and I will return to Auckland. On Friday morning, I will be attending the Iwi Chairs Forum in Waitangi at the Copthorne, and there will be a stand-up opportunity after that at around 12 noon. On Saturday, I'll be opening the 2019 Chinese New Year Festival and Market Day in Auckland. On Sunday, I'll be visiting Automatia Marae in Kaipara to make a regional development announcement with Minister Jones. And much of the following week, I will spend at Waitangi. The following Friday, I will be delivering an economic scene-setting speech to a business audience. I understand there is also some interest in a future cabinet reshuffle. I reflected on the timing of such a reshuffle over the summer period. The current focus of ministers and their ministries is rightly on delivering the 2019 budget. I have decided that I will therefore consider a reshuffle after the delivery of this key milestone. I do not want to detract from that agenda, given that stage of the process that we are now engaged in. For now, though, I want to make a brief announcement on what some of you have seen around consumers getting a fair deal in the banking and insurance, in their banking and insurance. We are all concerned at what the Reserve Bank of New Zealand and the FMA report into conduct and culture in the life insurance sector found. There are, I'm told, around 4 million life insurance policies held within New Zealand. These policies make a vast difference to the outcome for families when they're facing difficult times. Of course, we need to ensure that they are getting both fair and appropriate treatment. To hear that our consumers are paying effectively commissions double that of many countries and four times that of others seems to me just to be fundamentally wrong. My colleagues have also made me aware of some practices that are simply shocking. Life insurers need to be doing much better by the customers they serve. The fact that the report highlights similar problems to those found by the FMA and Reserve Bank in their report into conduct and culture in banking indicates to us as a government that we need to act. The Minister of Commerce and Consumer Affairs, Chris Farfoy, had hoped to be with us, but unfortunately is dealing with a personal matter, and so the Minister of Finance, Grant Robertson, will give you a few more details.
Thank you, Prime Minister. We are concerned by the findings of this report into life insurers' conduct and culture. As you know, it follows on from the report into banking conduct and culture released in November last year. The problems highlighted in both reports are similar, but more extensive in the life insurance sector. The issues that have been identified are serious, and we need to take action to fill the gaps in regulation. We're particularly concerned that life insurers haven't been putting consumers' interests at the top of their mind. That is unacceptable. It has led to a culture where sales are being prioritised over the interests of consumers. Incentives do play a very big part in the problems identified in the report. We want to ensure that any incentives do not get in the way of customer outcomes. Officials have been asked to recommend to us how to remove incentives that are leading to bad customer outcomes. This includes internal sales incentives and soft commissions. The government wants to strengthen the overall regulation of the banks and insurance companies, and we will be taking a fundamental look at how we regulate financial institutions. The next step is for us to propose these measures that to address the issues raised in the report. We have asked officials to move with urgency on this and to fast-track work that has been looked at for this coming year. What I want to say is that these regulations that we will be proposing will put consumers and their needs at the centre. We need a regime where banks and insurers are focused on good outcomes for the consumer and are not conflicted by sales rewards. We're going to seriously scrutinise the incentives in the insurance industry and make sure that those that are not in the interest of consumers are got rid of. Incentives such as overseas trips and loaded upfront commissions can cause conflicts for salespersons. Also, if you look at the report, and I do recommend you read it on page 28, there are a number of specific examples of poor conduct, including old policies not being cancelled when customers transfer to a new policy and premiums still being charged for the old policy, the selling of credit insurance to potentially ineligible customers, premiums continuing to be charged after a policy end date. These kinds of practices are unacceptable. We've also heard about policies being sold to people who were ineligible for cover as well. While the report only applies to life insurers, it is possible that these vulnerabilities exist more broadly across the insurance sector. We need to move now to ensure that both in banking and the insurance sector, that customer needs and consumer needs are put more clearly in focus. At a high level, what the government intends to do is to place clearer duties on banks and insurers to consider a customer's interest in outcomes and to treat customers fairly. We need a regulator that will be able to monitor this conduct with strong penalties for those who breach the duties. The changes applied will be for both banking and insurance, since the issues identified in both are similar. There are overlaps between the sectors as well, with banks often selling insurance policies. This is an area where we know we have to move quickly, and we hope to have legislation and regulation introduced by the end of this term, by the end of this year.
How badly do you think consumers are being ripped off by
It really does appear when you read this report that in the life insurance sector in particular, the focus has not been on consumers. Now, the reason for that in large part is because of the incentive regime that applies around that. That has simply not been enough. These kinds of issues that I raised with you are ones that really concern us. We're in particular, people who perhaps had a particular policy, that's changed, but they continue to be charged a premium for that policy after it's been changed. That's completely unacceptable behaviour. What we want to make sure is that the rules are fair. We had the report on the banking industry, and I do want to acknowledge that most of our major banks are now pulling back from the sales incentives approach that they had. We want to make sure that we close down that kind of incentive-based approach that's driving this behaviour. But we also want to make sure that we have proper processes in place for identifying conduct that is unacceptable and then for cracking down on it.
Would you categorise it as life insurers ripping off all the same consumers?
Certainly, we've got examples of that here. It's important, obviously, not to blame absolutely everybody for that, but there's enough in this report to indicate to me that there is a serious problem. And what we're saying today is we're not prepared to sit back and wait. We are going to regulate to make sure the consumers' interests are protected. That will, of course, have to apply across the insurance industry as well as the banking industry, and we'll be working with those industries to develop these proposals.
Prime Minister, are consumers being fleeced?
Some of the examples are pretty atrocious, and when you read the report, you see that. And it's clear, as the Minister of Finance has said, that the focus has not been on the consumer. And so we need to change that focus.
Should the regulators name names? Otherwise everyone's going to touch the same brush.
I've got some sympathy with that view, but this is the FMA and the Reserve Bank's report. What they've decided to do is give a timeline for those companies to remedy the situation. That's the same approach that they applied with the banking inquiry, so I think they're probably saying that they need to be consistent there. But quite clearly, if they don't feel they're getting the response they want, then the name and shame should be an option.
How have they been able to get away with this?
The lack of regulation, Barry. That's the point, is that what's happened here is that this is a sector that hasn't been regulated properly. What we tend to do here is regulate the product rather than the way the product is sold or the organisation that's responsible for it. So that's what we're trying to address here, is that we actually need regulation that gives customers some assurance that not just the product is sound, but also the process around it being sold to them.
What kind of kickback are you expecting from the industry?
I don't know. I haven't seen anything yet. I think certainly in the banking sector, what we saw in response to that initial report was positive. They recognised where they needed to move, particularly around the sales practice issue. I'd like to think we'd get the same reaction from the insurance industry. And we'll certainly...
Yeah,
it is, and that's why we're moving in the way we are.
Look, I think this is going to shake people's faith in parts of the industry, and so this is about putting in place oversight that can rebuild that faith. And I would have thought that responsible insurers will absolutely be on board with wanting to do that for consumers.
Is there scope to provide a little bit more extra resourcing to the FMA and Reserve Bank so they're able to probe the market a little bit more in areas they feel that is needed?
As I acknowledged both in the media release and in my comments today, an appropriately resourced monitoring agency is required here if we're serious about this, and I understand that, and we'll work that through.
How far do we get from here to appropriately resource?
Sorry, Jason.
How far do we get from where we are now to appropriately resource?
We have to work on that with the agencies involved, but as I say, if we're serious about protecting consumers, I recognise that we need an appropriately resourced.
How much have they asked for?
I'm not going to go into that today.
How much penalties have been the penalties have to be to change the behaviour?
Yeah, that's a very interesting point, and it's one of the things that we'd like to consult on, is where do we set the line for that? Look, in all of these situations, my view is if the organisation concerned move there themselves, that's the best possible outcome. And as I say, we've started to see that with the banks, but we clearly have to set in place appropriate penalties. That's exactly what we'll be consulting on.
Yeah, that's just right. If you're waiting for a penalty regime, then presumably harm has already been done. So if we create a regulatory regime that hopefully encourages that good behaviour, then it's good enough.
Could the appropriately resourced regulator actually be a new regulator, and perhaps merge regulator?
That's something, you know, that's a proposal that may come forward. We clearly have with the FMA, an organisation that's doing a good job, in my opinion. But that's, you know, we'll take a look at that as we work our way through the process. But no decision's been made on that.
Will that, in looking in the dovetail of the Reserve Bank,
review. Yeah, we'll certainly keep the two processes in mind, but I think we can press on with this. We currently have the Financial Services Legislation Amendment Bill for Parliament. Minister Farfoy is also undertaking an insurance contract review. So those two processes are ongoing and offer us the opportunity to pick some of these issues up. But what we're signalling today is that we are bringing forward the work on regulation so that we can have legislation introduced this year.
Is there a case to have a state-owned life insurer, given that the private sector seems to be able to trust it?
No, that's not something that we've been considering at this point. We, you know, we want to have a sector where there's healthy competition, where people have confidence in the products that they're buying. We need to make work through the process we've got here, and we don't have that on the table at this stage.
Just on the bank capital review, have the banks expressed to you concern about the apparently very high levels of capital increase that the Reserve Bank have asked for, and are you concerned that that extra $20 billion of capital might affect the economy as the banks wind back a little bit more and change the rules?
Not directly to me, Bernard, no. I mean, that may be a function of the break, and that I'll receive some direct representations. This is an independent decision by the Reserve Bank, and, you know, the questions that you've got are best directed to them. We will keep an eye, obviously, on any impacts, but on the other side of the coin, all New Zealanders want to make sure that our banking system is robust and that we can manage and handle, you know, any situations that come along that put that under stress. So, I'll keep a watchful eye on it, but this is an independent decision.
Were you shocked to read the report? There was some pretty strong language by both the FMA and the Reserve Bank Governor.
I wouldn't use the word shocked, but this is a report that I do find disturbing, and I think it's the reason why we've said today we need to act.
Would you cap or outright ban sales incentives for insurers?
I think we're getting close to removing certainly some of them. The soft commission approach, you know, this is the idea that, you know, sell a certain number of products and you get a trip to Rome. That approach clearly is driving some behaviours that are not in the consumer's interest. I think those kinds of practices should be banned effectively. Whether or not there are other sales practices that can survive, we can work our way through. But clearly those behaviours have been driving some of the things that have caused problems.
Look, I just wanted the opportunity, given the interest in the tax working group, for any questions on that to be asked before Minister Robertson and the tax is leaving. Anything specific that hasn't already been answered?
When are you expecting to get that report back, and when will you release it and let us know what you're
doing? We're expecting to get it by the end of the week, and then we'll take a little bit of time, as I imagine you'll understand, for a cabinet to have a look at it, talk to our coalition colleagues as well, and we'll give you a timeline for that when we receive it. Towards the end of this week.
You've ruled out a capital gains tax on the family home. Would it apply to family home in a trust?
All of those details will need to be worked through as we go. But family home is off limits.
Does that include family home if it's in a trust?
It would do. But the family home is off limits. But all the details around how things get treated, as long as it's your primary place of residence, that's clear and fine. Then you have to have a definition of that. Drop that in the bright line test at the moment, but we're absolutely clear the family home remains secret.
So it's in a trust though, isn't there room to kind of manipulate what exactly family home is and whether it is
in their
family home?
Well, we can take a look at those definitional issues, but the family home is
on. Is it still your intention to bring legislation before this parliament which would provisionally implement any capital gains tax?
It's our intention to bring forward any legislation arising from what we decide to do with this report this term of Parliament.
So is that an absolute? I mean, what if one of the coalition partners you can't get agreement from?
Well, we can only pass legislation with the agreement of our coalition partners. The point I'm making is that we now have to work through this report, not only to see whether we like all of the options and what packages fit together, but then there's what is possible to pass. And that's an absolute reality of this Parliament. We can only pass legislation with support from our two coalition partners. We'll continue to work with them on what that will look like.
So the
decision
was waited until after the election to have it enacted.
Yeah. And it's absolute consistent.
Nothing's changed.
Nothing changes in that regard.
So you bring forward legislation,
which is exactly what we said.
Nothing will take effect.
So potentially one of your coalition partners could veto.
Well, that's possible for every bit of legislation, Richard.
Yeah, but I mean, this is a fairly fundamental piece.
And look, this is the whole point. We're now going to work through what's recommended by the tax working group, take a look at the packages that they are putting forward, see which ones we can get consensus on among our partners. That's just the reality of government.
That's a given. Everything we do in this government is by consensus.
So how confident are you that you'll be able to get everything you would like?
I'm confident that we can deliver policy with consensus. We've done it many times before.
No, how confident are you that you could deliver policy that you want and like?
Again,
it'll always be what we want and like.
Yeah. We wouldn't agree to a consensus unless we were happy with what it was delivering. But again, we've got to wait for the report to come.
Is Labour in New Zealand First, are you on the same page in terms of the broad-based capital gains tax?
Again, these are all hypotheticals. While we wait for the report to come in, we're setting out a timeline for you. When it's received, we will then give you the timeline for the consideration by government and government parties.
Yeah, so, Labour got cold feet over its capital gains tax before the last election. Are you up for that fight going into the next election?
No, look, to be really clear, what we set out was a timeline for voters so that they would know that whatever we did, they'd have a chance to vote on it.
Labour,
and that
Labour
remains
in capital gains tax for the last decade, basically. Labour have been discussing the capital gains tax for the last decade or so. Are you keen to have this behind you and done as an issue?
Well, look, as I say, we will, as a government, build consensus. But again, these are all hypotheticals until the report is received and it's considered by the government.
Are you sounding out New Zealand First as you go, as the tax working group comes up with options?
We've had some conversations about the board issues, yeah, but we're all waiting for the report. That's exactly why we need some time when we get it to be able to work through the recommendations.
Let's be clear. Now, let's be clear. This is absolutely no different than every single policy consideration that comes before this government. We work through a process of consensus building. We will undertake that process once we've received the report,
this
and we haven't to date. But so are many things that the government considers, and this is the way coalition MEP governments put it. I'll take the last question.
Do you personally support capital gains tax?
Sorry,
we've got
yeah.
Are you still committed to having a threshold for small businesses on which capital gains tax would apply?
These are all details to be worked through once we get the report.
Then you just wait until we receive the report.
Do you personally support a capital gains tax on shares?
Again, we are not going into any of the details of a report that has not yet been received by the
your
government and has not yet been discussed as coalition partners. Last question, Bernard.
Are you going to limit the government's selection of response to this, to the recommendations from the report. For example, the report ruled out an ATAX a long time ago. Didn't include it in the final. Would you, look at that?
We're going to work off the basis of the recommendations of the report, but quite clearly as we go through the consensus building process, we'll take a look at what ideas emerge there. What we said at the outset is we're trying to improve the fairness and the balance of the tax system. The report's going to be a really important contribution to
that. Do you concede that the
like that was the last question on that? Just to be clear as well, you're going to get the same response until we're in a position to comment on the report more in a more fulsome way, which means after we've had a chance to consider it. So we'll give you a timeline once we've received the report. All right, moving on to, we'll free you now, Minister Robertson. All right, moving on to more general issues.
Prime Minister, on the Kiwi Bill, was that discussed with Canada, and where are you at with that? What's the plan going forward?
The Minister of Housing gave an update to Cabinet colleagues, but as I think he's already outlined, he intends to bring a paper to Cabinet a little bit further down the track with some of his planning around Kiwi Bill.
What's the thing that came out at Brightner and said that the government was still pushing forward, trying to meet that target that the Minister had downgraded effectively? Was he correct in saying that?
He's absolutely correct in the government's motivation. And we don't apologise for the fact that we are tackling the housing crisis head on, and we are building houses. As I've said, though, evidence to date is that the pace isn't as quick as we would like, but we remain absolutely committed to the 10-year target, and we are only 6 months into that programme.
Henry. Does the policy need a refit, particularly this line of the
streams? Yeah, as I say, 6 months in, this is a chance for a minister to look at how each of these streams are tracking, and he'll be report back to Cabinet on that. He's already given the numbers, and absolutely they demonstrate that based on the number of houses that we have ready to be built, tough for us. The contracted number of houses are in the thousands, but in terms of completion, it's a housing crisis and it's difficult, but we remain absolutely committed to building houses, and we are.
How many houses will you build
by? The target itself of 1,000 won't be.
Those were all interim targets. The overall target of building 100,000 homes. We are 6 months into that. We are building and delivering homes. We just want the pace to pick up.
How many will you build by July, and how many will you build by
again, I'll leave those final numbers for the Minister after he's come back with a paper.
Does the
Minister
actually
not?
Policy
relies too much on the private sector. Is that the issue here? You're not getting these private sector incentives aren't working.
There's a number of issues that we're addressing, and the Minister is. But again, we all accept, even the opposition accepts, that we have a housing crisis in New Zealand. And one of the things we need to deal with is supply. We will not change this crisis without houses being built. So that is why we remain absolutely committed to both building houses within our Housing New Zealand program and within Kiwi Build.
So the government need to inject more capital into the Kiwi Build project, or are you suffice with the 2 million?
Look, some of what the Minister's working through is more around the delivery and some of the intricacies of the program rather than the capital available.
So 2 million is enough. So 2 billion is still enough for 100,000.
That seems to be the case at
this point. How big of a distraction is the stealth between Stephen Barclay and
That's not something I'm engaged in at all. I maintain the absolute position that I did before we broke for summer, and that is that the issue is being discussed, it's an employment matter. It was around alleged conduct issues. It has nothing to do with Kiwi Bill.
Would you build Nancy Holmes by the end?
Sorry, I'll just finish.
Do you accept his comments that under his leadership they were on track?
That is disputed. Again, what is at play here is an alleged conduct issue. That's not something for me. That's something for the State Services Commission.
Will you build
100,000 homes within 10 years, and we're 6 months into that program.
But you might not even make the 1,000 target by the end of this year.
I will not apologise for the fact that we are building houses. I just wish we were doing it at a much faster pace. But we are turning around the housing crisis, which ultimately demands that we intervene and build houses. I think even the last government will now admit that was what was required.
How many extra houses
did the government... What issues will this paper pull to address?
I'll leave that to the Minister once he's presented it to Cabinet. I'm not going to preempt him on that.
Okay.
There were other targets, because there was the idea of 5,000 homes in the 2019-2020 year, and then 12,000 a year every year progressively until 2028. Is the government still on target to meet those targets?
Yeah, again, the target that matters for us is the 10-year program. That's 100,000 homes. And again, as I say, we are only 6 months into that. And we are building and delivering homes. The first families are already in the Kiwi Build homes. It's just not happening at the pace that we would like.
Right, but the Health Minister did come out specifically set targets, numerical targets. You're saying today that you can't recommit to those targets?
He's already outlined the number that we've been able to deliver and those that we're on track to deliver. We have 4,000 roughly under contract. We have several hundred that are under construction. But as I say, the target that matters to us is the 100,000 homes that we've committed to. It is a 10-year program. We are still only 6 months into that.
But how can voters trust that? How can voters trust that 100,000 target if we can't meet the initial targets?
And again, we will have to keep demonstrating the progress that we are making. But
so
as with any program, let me give you an example. I'm advised that it took some years for the ramping up of our state house building program originally. It does take time to ramp up these programs. We have already delivered several hundred homes already. We're contracted to deliver 4,000 again. As I say, we are building houses, just not at the pace that we would like, but we are only 6 months into a 10-year program.
Do you think you and the minister underestimated how difficult
this is? No, I think it's fair to say it was and still is a housing crisis. And if it were easy, then probably the last government would have been able to make a dent in it. And the difference is that they were unwilling to take on the hardest nub of this issue, and that is building houses. We were willing to take that on, and we remain committed to taking that on. As I say, this is a 10-year program, and we are going to keep at it, because ultimately we will only fix this crisis by providing more houses in the New Zealand market. And the market had failed. That's why we've stepped in.
If you could have your time again,
are
you still
relying on the market?
No, that's not fair to say. Without this intervention, without the underwrite, without, for instance, the state coming in and building directly, these houses would not be being delivered.
And built directly?
Well, Unitech, for instance, is a development that's coming straight as a result of the government's intervention.
So Andrew Brady, she's got Australian media, that she's threatened you to weekly after the police were teaching.
Yes. No, I was only advised this morning that had been received. I haven't had a chance to see that. I do want to see the letter, and I will respond directly to Ms. Brady. I have, as I say, and as I've said before, I have sought assurances that everything that should be done is being done. I will seek those assurances again, as much as I am able to, in terms of the limits on my ability to direct the New Zealand Police.
Can you tell us why you went against official advice and gave the Wittig Group an increase in funding?
Sorry, do you want to give me more expansion?
No, Peter Jackson apparently lobbied you at David Parker, and your advice was...
I don't consider that to be an accurate description of events. If you look back to my position on the incentives regime in New Zealand, I've been utterly consistent. Back from the time I was in opposition, I lobbied the then government to keep pace with the incentive regime. At that time, our film industry was suffering. It's fair to say government officials have always taken a fairly consistent position, and I have consistently disagreed with it.
Prime Minister, on Venezuela, a lot of Western countries have recognised that countries living in Australia.
Yeah.
Why haven't we?
Yeah, we have a long-standing foreign policy position, regardless of who's in office, advised, of not recognising political parties and their call on power. But what we do as a country, and rightly so, is call out human rights abuses. We call out when individuals are unable to access their democratic rights and freedoms. And we would absolutely do that in the case of Venezuela. It is absolutely clear that people are suffering under the current regime and that they deserve access to their democratic rights and freedoms. When New Zealand takes a pause, isn't specifically endorsing political parties.
That puts us out of sync, though, with some of our friends and neighbours. Does that concern you?
No. And actually, you know, to be fair, when I was overseas, we had some general discussions around what's happening in Venezuela. I set out New Zealand's history around endorsing political parties. Absolutely no one expressed concern around that approach. And as I say, that doesn't stop New Zealand supporting and enforcing our call for human rights to be upheld and for people to have access to a robust, transparent democracy. It is clear that in Venezuela, people are experiencing incredibly harsh circumstances and they deserve to have their democratic rights and voice heard. Has it gone through?
Are you confident that we'll go?
Look, I absolutely believe we'll reach consensus, and when we have an announcement tonight, we'll make it.
Is it the same as the Labour? We were supposed to have an announcement on that last year.
When we have an announcement to make, we'll make it. But as I say, I'm confident of consensus.
Is it a concern to you that the West Coast has rejected the
economy? Yeah, I did see that. And look, I think probably it's important for us to look at where there is consensus. I would have thought that on the West Coast, I'll absolutely, in the same way that many countries and many parts of New Zealand are, will see the impacts of climate change. And we can have a debate around their view on its causes, or we can make sure that we have a plan for adaptation and mitigation. And so I think we should focus on where there's agreement.
Part of their reasoning was because the evidence providing anthropogenic climate change must be presented and proven beyond reasonable doubt. Is that climate change denial?
Well, I think that actually the IPCC report does that. And there is now international consensus. My concern is that if we delay and spend too much time on where we disagree, we'll forget where we do agree. And I think on the West Coast there'll be general agreement that we are seeing harsher weather events, we are seeing sea level rises, and it's our duty to do something about it. All right, everyone. Yes. Thanks very much.